Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Almost half of Americans start their morning opening a pill bottle. We take pills for everything, from colds to cancer. But are Americans taking too much medication? Dr. Andrew Weil says we are, and it's hurting our health. He claims there are other options, better ones, treatments with fewer side effects and risks. This hour on Point, looking beyond medication to alternatives. You can join us on air or online. What's your pill regimen? Have you sworn them off for more alternative treatments? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me this hour from Tempe, Arizona, is Dr. Andrew Weil, a pioneer in the field of integrative alternative medicine, professor of integrative rheumatology at the University of Arizona. He's the director of the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. His new book is Mind Over Meds: Know When Drugs Are Necessary, When Alternatives Are Better, and When to Let Your Body Heal on Its Own. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Dr. Weil, welcome to On Point. Nice to speak with you.
Hi, Jane.
So the premise of this book is that Americans have become over-medicated. Give us the numbers. Help us understand the problem.
Well, I grew up in the late 1940s and 1950s, and the statistics are that in that period, Americans took prescribed medication at about 10% of the rate that they do now. At the same time, the use of over-the-counter medication has skyrocketed, and obviously a great many of us are also taking dietary supplements, vitamins, minerals, herbs, other natural remedies. So the use of all this is quite astonishing, and there has been a tremendous increase in medication of children and of the elderly.
Mm. So you say in the book we take drugs to help us sleep, to keep us awake, to stop our noses from running, our backs from aching, and our minds from racing. Name a symptom, there's a pill to suppress it. Are doctors prescribing more? Are patients asking for more?
Both. I think that the expectations of patients to be medicated are very great, but doctors are trained to give medicine and they're not really trained in other ways of managing illness. No responsible physician would reject medication as a way of treating disease. Medications can be life-saving. But there are many other ways of managing illness, starting with lifestyle modification, changing diet, increasing physical activity, attending to stress, improving sleep, and so forth. There are natural remedies that can work very effectively. There are other kinds of medicine. There's the whole range of mind-body interventions, and these are not taught in medical schools. So the first problem is that doctors are only trained to do one thing, and the other is that patients have this high expectation to be medicated.
So you're not saying to discount medication or even to eliminate it by any means?
No, not at all. I mean, I advocate integrative treatment, and that may include medication. I do recommend that if medication is used, that you start with the lowest dose of the least potent agent as demanded by the circumstances of illness. I also feel that if you get improvement with medication, you should try to back off the use of it, because I worry that if medication is used long term, especially when it's a standalone treatment, that it may get you into worse problems, that it may intensify or prolong the condition that it was used for.
You say in the book, just a couple of facts here, Americans take 10 times as many prescriptions as we did in the 1950s. Roughly half of all Americans take at least one prescription drug. Two-thirds of all doctor's appointments involved some sort of drug therapy. You also write in the book that you want people to become more wise consumers when it comes to medication, to know when it's necessary, when it's not. How do you answer that question?
Well, ideally, you find a practitioner who's trained integratively. There are more. Our center has graduated over 1,500 physicians in all specialties from very intensive trainings. They're in practice in all states. In the book, I tell you how to find such a practitioner. You want to be an informed consumer. I suggest not taking a medication just because a doctor tells you you should. You want to find out what the risks of that medication are, what the benefits are, whether there are other ways for managing the condition.
You refer to yourself as a doctor of integrative medicine. What does that mean?
Well, this is a new system. It's gaining a lot of traction. Half of the nation's medical schools have joined a consortium for integrative health and medicine. Oxford University Press publishes a general series of textbooks for clinicians that I'm the general editor of in integrative medicine. There are textbooks in this field. It is – the short answer is it's the intelligent combination of conventional and alternative medicine, but it's really more than that. Integrative medicine focuses on – first on the body's innate potential for healing. It looks at patients as whole persons, not just physical bodies. It especially pays great attention to lifestyle and lifestyle factors that influence health, and then it's willing to use all available methods for managing illness as long as they're not going to cause harm and show reasonable evidence for efficacy.
You know what some people say, Dr. Wiles, that integrative medicine is pseudoscience and that none of it is regulated by the FDA. It's untested. It's unproven. I mean, is there any truth to that claim?
You know, there are some methods out there and there are some practitioners who are advocating unscientific treatments and dangerous treatments. There are some dangerous products on the market for sure. But, you know, the responsible integrative practitioners recommend treatments that have solid evidence behind them. In the integrative treatment plans that I give for common conditions in the book, you know, all of these are referenced to the scientific literature.
So are you talking about homeopathy? Are you talking about acupuncture? What are you talking about?
I very rarely recommend people to homeopathy. I think that's one for which we don't have good scientific evidence. Acupuncture, on the other hand, has been validated as a treatment for conditions like back pain, sinus, acute sinus infections, joint problems. So that is a referral that I might make.
So integrated.
But I would also say I recommend first lifestyle modification, you know, dietary change, exercise regimens, mind-body interventions such as breathing techniques to modulate stress. I do use botanical medicine. I'm trained as a botanist as well as a physician, so I recommend safe and effective herbal remedies. And I make referrals to other practitioners, including things like osteopathic manipulation, chiropractic, various forms of massage, traditional Chinese medicine.
So you're not saying a cancer patient should drop chemo and run to the herbal store, or are you?
No, but you know, I'll just tell you one story. A few years ago, I was in China, and I was taken to a very large hospital in Beijing called Guanganmen Hospital. The entire hospital is devoted to integrative medicine, and the largest department was oncology. And every cancer patient there got conventional treatment, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation as necessary, and in addition got very sophisticated nutritional therapy, very sophisticated herbal therapy, acupuncture, and these other treatments were designed to reduce the toxicity of the conventional treatments, increase their efficacy, and improve quality of life. They had good outcomes, and it made me very sad to realize that so few patients in this country are able to access that kind of treatment.
So you're talking about an Eastern and Western methodology combination? Are these
yes.
two in tandem? Is that kind of the message?
I would say yes. And I'll tell you a story. I have a colleague and friend, a Chinese physician who practices in New York, trained in China, a very wise man, who once said to me, if you could summarize all of Eastern medical philosophy in one sentence, it would be to dispel evil and support the good. Western medicine focuses entirely on dispelling evil. That is, we identify agents of disease, problems, and we develop weapons against them. We counteract them. Supporting the good means supporting the body's defensive functions, its natural resistance. I think both of these approaches are necessary, but the Western approach has been very lopsided.
Do integrative treatments come with their own set of risks? And how is someone who is considering integrative treatment, how are they supposed to weigh those risks?
You know, I think the risks of medication and conventional therapies exceed those of integrative treatment. And again, just as if you look through the book at the integrative treatments I suggest, for example, for the management of anxiety disorders, I think these are completely safe. Such as breathing exercises or use of an herbal remedy, kava. You know, these are infinitely safer than the benzodiazepines, drugs like Ativan and Valium, which are the standard medical approaches.
So you're saying I just want to be clear here. You said traditional treatments are often more risky.
Let's call them conventional treatments. Because to me, traditional means, having persisted over the years like Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm. So you write in the book that children and the elderly are two groups that are at most risk for some of this over-medication that you're talking about. What makes these two groups so vulnerable?
Well, first of all, children are not little adults. They're different. Their systems are more sensitive. I think the particular area of concern that I have is the use of psychiatric medication in kids. You know, the image of children lining up in classrooms for their medication, like patients in a psych ward, that's just frightening to me. And some of the drugs that are used, you know, it's now common practice to give antipsychotic drugs along with antidepressant drugs. Antipsychotic drugs were developed for major mental illness like schizophrenia. They're not supposed to be given as first-line interventions along with SSRI antidepressants because the SSRIs don't work that well. I mean, that's really bad medicine, especially giving this to kids. We have no idea what the effects of these medications are on the developing brain. So we're doing an experiment with our nation's kids, and the outcomes might be very bad. The elderly, I think the same thing, very sensitive to medication. If I look in the medicine chest of an elderly person, often I see a dozen different prescription medications prescribed by different physicians who probably didn't talk with each other.
So I know a lot of moms who say, you know, we've tried everything. This is what works, and some kids need this, and every patient is different. Every kid is different.
I couldn't agree more. There is a subset of kids, for example, with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, who respond very well to stimulant medication. But this diagnosis is being made very casually, and the medication is being dispensed, I think, very thoughtlessly.
And 60% of older Americans, you write, may be on a drug that they don't need. Is that right?
I think in many cases, the medications that are used are not necessary. And worse, they may be doing more harm than good.
Adverse drug reactions, fourth leading cause of death in the United States. Get that right?
You got that right.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about a big rethink this hour of medical treatments as we know them, from medication to your diet to alternative therapies. You can join the conversation. What's your verdict on acupuncture, on homeopathy, on meditation? Do you hear danger signs in this conversation? We're speaking this hour with Dr. Andrew Weil. For years, he's been a true believer of integrative alternative medicine. His new book is Mind Over Meds, Know When Drugs Are Necessary, When Alternatives Are Better, and When to Let Your Body Heal on Its Own. Here's some sound from a CNN town hall last year. This is Baltimore Health Commissioner Dr. Leanna Wen talking about how to get doctors to stop overprescribing. She says it comes down to a culture of access.
Doctors have to own the problem, and we have to be careful ourselves about prescribing medications, but we also have to get patients involved too. I urge for all patients to ask your doctor every single time, do I need this medication? What are the side effects? What are the alternatives? There is a culture of excess. It's not just what doctors are doing, but also patients expect a pill for every pain.
And a 2015 NPR report on alternative treatments for chronic pain followed Doris Keene, a resident of Portland, Oregon, with chronic knee pain. She became addicted to Vicodin after her doctor prescribed it. After her supply of pain medication ran out, Keene began going to the Quest Center for Integrative Health, which specializes in alternative treatments for chronic pain. Here she is telling NPR about her reaction to her first acupuncture treatment by her doctor.
I mean, I come in here wearing back braces and knee braces and a crutch, and Dr. Dave told me, get rid of them. They're just weakening your muscles. And when I could walk out of here after the first acupuncture, I mean, I wanted to grab him and kiss him.
So, Dr. Weil, not every story is a miracle story. I mean, I guess you'd agree with that.
I do, but it's great to hear that. And, you know, we've seen so much in the news about the opioid epidemic. I think this has really forced us to the realization that the management of chronic pain syndrome must be integrative. In fact, the state of Oregon a couple of years ago passed an Oregon Integrative Pain Management Initiative saying that doctors had to manage chronic pain syndrome integratively, meaning you can't just rely on medication, that you have to use other methods, and things like acupuncture, yoga, nutritional therapies, physical activity, mind-body interventions, the whole range of what we have available.
So speak to that opioid epidemic, because it's on so many people's minds these days. I mean, are you saying a deeper doctor-patient relationship? Is that really at the heart of this?
Well, first of all, opioids are great drugs. They're great drugs for the treatment of moderate to severe acute pain. But chronic pain syndrome is a different animal. When pain persists, other areas of the brain become involved, behavior becomes distorted, and medication alone cannot solve that problem. And I think we've been forced to see this. So doctors' relationship with opioids over the years has been very uneasy and troubled. They've either overprescribed, underprescribed, not taken responsibility for the consequences of their actions. I think, as I say, we're being forced now to the realization that there has to be a new way of dealing with chronic pain.
Long line of calls here, Dr. Weil. Let's get Karen in first from Quincy, Mass. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you.
You bet. Go ahead.
So I suffer from chronic migraines and at one point had acid reflux and was on so many preventative medications every day that when I finally found a new doctor and had an EKG reading, it was irregular. And she said that I'm on way too many medications for someone my age. And now I've realized just through my own research that really changing my diet and going low on sugar and carbs has greatly decreased the number of migraines I have per month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when I've asked different specialists about it, they often have nothing to offer except for just throwing different medications at me. So I find it very frustrating. I don't feel like the doctors have a good range of different options or even different dietary options. So I've had to do the research myself.
You had to do it on your own.
And as far as,
yep.
far as the acid reflux, I found that doing the natural vinegar every day has almost completely cured that. So now I don't take medication for that either.
Karen, thanks so much.
There's a chapter in Mind Over Meds on the medications used for acid reflux, which I think are some of the most dangerous out there, especially the proton pump inhibitors, the PPIs. If these are used for any length of time, it becomes impossible to get off them or very difficult, that they suppress acid production in the stomach. If you try to reduce the dose, there's a rebound effect that gets you into worse symptoms than you had to begin with. And this is a common problem with the medications that we use. This is why say that you don't want to rely on them long-term as standalone treatments.
So you were in a conversation like this, Dr. Weil, that someone hears that and they say, oh, I'm going to take myself off those meds. Those just don't sound good to me, Dr. Weil says.
Well, one of the strong pieces of advice I give in the book is that you never stop taking a prescribed medicine suddenly. In almost all cases, what you want to do is to try to wean off slowly, and you don't even begin that process until you've put other measures in place to manage the condition.
Jason in here from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hi, Jason. You're on the air with Dr. Andrew Weil.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Dr. Weil, thanks for all your work. I just wanted to call in and share my experience. My wife is a doctor of oriental medicine, and she's been in practice for 25 years. And has treated over 80,000 people for a number of different things. And basically my personal experience with the world of complementary medicine, when we first started dating, every now and then I'd get pretty severe migraine headaches. And I mentioned it to her one day, and she just took my pulses and looked at my tongue, and she said, oh, you're dehydrated. So the next time you get one of these, start to feel one of these headaches coming on, just start drinking a lot of room temperature water and see what happens. And ever since then, that's been my remedy for these headaches, and they're gone within 20 minutes. And we've got two kids, and probably through eighth grade, they never had a day of sickness. So I thought that was pretty stellar. And, you know, we take a bunch of herbs, and we have, you know, a good diet. And I think that there are just a lot of options out there that that are straightforward options, maybe not super simple, but certainly straightforward options that are available.
Got it, Jason. I do appreciate your call, Andrew Weil. I hear that. And, you know, I'm a doctor's daughter. I grew up in the conventional medical world.
Yeah.
And I think, gosh, you know, maybe that works for dehydration, for that rash on my arm, for those cold symptoms I had last week. But is it dangerous, even irresponsible, to try this stuff on more hardcore cases? You know, you don't want to take a heart patient and turn him into an integrative medical patient.
Well, you know, really, I think for any condition you name, integrative treatment makes most sense. And again, that does not mean rejecting conventional therapy, but it means combining conventional therapy with other methods that may enable you to use lower doses of medication, use it for shorter periods of time, and to get improvements, better improvements than you can get with standard treatment alone. Mm.
Dr. Weil, stand by for a moment. I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Peter Cohen. He's a general internist at the Cambridge Health Alliance, professor at the Harvard Medical School. His research looks at dietary supplements, preventative medicine, and weight loss. He's also the co-founder of the website Updates in Slow Medicine, which emphasizes evidence-based treatments and the importance of lifestyle changes for improving your health. Dr. Peter Cohen, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, Jane, thanks for having me.
What do you hear in this conversation?
Well, I hear a lot of great information being shared. I completely agree with Dr. Weil's assessment of the problem. We have a tremendous problem with over-prescribing medications, and we, both patients and as physicians, we're way too fast to turn to medications. And we also underemphasize or underperceive the risks of those medications, and Dr. Weil's work on that is excellent to bring awareness to both the overprescribing and to understanding the risks.
How do you view integrative medicine, and are there treatments out there that stand out to you as good, and maybe some that are not supported by the evidence?
Well, I am completely agree and emphasize on a daily basis in clinic with my patients the importance of the lifestyle changes and the importance of diet, exercise, mind-body, relaxation techniques. These are all superb approaches to managing many of the ailments that we suffer from, and we should be turning to those well before prescription medications.
Well,
sometimes I think that the healthy skepticism that I share with Dr. Weil regarding prescription medications, that skepticism is not equally applied to the botanical, herbal, and other alternative medications. So I think that we as a society also overuse botanical supplements, for example, or acupuncture or chiropractic care. It's not that these things like acupuncture does not have a very important role in treatment, but there's indication creep. If it's helpful for a specific scenario, we're a little too comfortable using it for so many more people.
You've written in the Journal of the American Medical Association, actually, about studies which show that some dietary supplements, multivitamins, for example, to prevent heart disease, or echinacea for the common cold, vitamin E for prostate cancer, that there were no benefits for people taking those supplements, that just didn't work. That's your thesis. I mean, why might people continue to take those supplements when the science isn't there?
That's a great question, and I think there's a few reasons why that happens. First off, we have to appreciate the complexity of the data here. In all of these situations, we can almost always find a small human study that suggests that a particular botanical or vitamin is useful treating a particular condition. But the question is, as the studies become more sophisticated, as we do larger studies that are carefully randomized controlled trials that involve products that are high quality products, what are the results of those studies? And if the data continues to accumulate that a treatment is effective, then we're going to embrace it like we do for a combination of vitamins for macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. But if the meticulous studies, the accumulation of meticulous studies, end up to not demonstrate benefit, then we're going to turn back to healthy eating, exercise, relaxation techniques as the best approach.
Dr. Weil, jump back in here. I mean, you hear what Dr. Cohen's saying. There are a lot of nuances. The complexity of the data, one of them.
I think we're mostly in agreement. I would say because of my expertise in the area of botanical medicine, I'm probably more enthusiastic about some of these products than Dr. Cohen might be. For example, nettles, freeze-dried nettle leaves, I find to be the superior remedy for hay fever symptoms. It works better than any antihistamine. An enormous amount of clinical experience with its at least one good randomized controlled trial demonstrating its effect. No toxicity whatever. And in fact, when people with hay fever begin using nettles, you can take 1 to 2 capsules every 2 to 4 hours as needed for symptoms. Over time, the hay fever tends to disappear. That does not happen when you use suppressive medication like antihistamines. Mm-hmm. Or I mentioned earlier kava for anxiety, an excellent remedy, very safe, good track record, lots of evidence behind it, infinitely safer than the pharmaceutical drugs that are used for the management of anxiety. I couldn't agree more that there are many worthless and probably a few dangerous supplements and herbs out there. But the relative dangers of these things compared to those of pharmaceutical medication are insignificant.
Let's go to Aiken, South Carolina. Brenda is on the line. Hi, Brenda. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Hi. And guests. I could not agree more with Dr. Weil about the efficacy of acupuncture and these other therapies. I tried it in the past, and it did wonders for me. However, today, I live at the poverty line, and one $50 copay for acupuncture for one treatment will buy me 2 or 3 months' supply of pain medication.
Yep.
And I would just like someone to address the fact that these alternate modalities are not available to low-income people.
Right. Brenda, it's such an excellent point. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, very much. And, I think I do not want to see integrative medicine become medicine for the affluent. It should be medicine for everybody. And the stumbling block here is our priorities of reimbursement. And this has to change. We happily reimburse for medication, for procedures. We don't pay a physician to sit with a patient and teach them a breathing technique or to talk to them about how to improve their diet or exercise. And that, to me, is the single greatest obstacle to real healthcare reform.
I mean, you talk about priorities of reimbursement. I mean, you know, insurance doesn't cover many, if any, of these forms of treatment.
Right.
Jim is in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I was taught that if you're taking more than 5 medications, there's going to be some interaction between them. We don't know what that interaction might be, but it's probably present. And these interactions are probably worse in the elderly.
You are correct. And I wanted to say that in this book, I asked a pharmacist to write a chapter on a pharmacist's view of overmedication. I'm a great fan of pharmacists. I think they are an underutilized resource in all of this. Pharmacists are trained to provide a service called a medication therapy management review. This can often be done for free or at nominal cost, or it's covered by Medicare. You can take your list of medications to a pharmacist, and they can tell you which may not be necessary, which may be duplicative, which may be interacting in ways that are not good. They can't make changes, but they can recommend changes to the health provider or to the patient. And I think I meet very few physicians who are aware that pharmacists can do this. And I think very few patients are aware that pharmacists can do this. You want to take advantage of that service.
The pharmacist can compare those herbal remedies against the prescription drugs as well, right?
If they've been trained in that, that's the one problem here, that pharmacy education, like medical education, tends to be deficient in information on dietary supplements, herbs, and so forth. But if a pharmacist has gotten up to speed on that, they can advise about that as well.
I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Relationships are important.
Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and Blue Apron makes cooking together fun and easy. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So join in, get the family together, and choose your meals each week. They come to your door with pre-measured ingredients so you can spend time with your family and not at the grocery store. With the simple instructions, everyone can help prepare the meal. There's no risk. Get your first 3 meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about traditional medicine's reliance on medication this hour, and Dr. Andrew Weil's push for alternative, integrative treatments. And hearing the pushback, too, you can join the conversation after hearing this conversation. Are you skeptical or ready to give something else a try? You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Andrew Weil, pioneer in integrative medicine, and Dr. Peter Cohen, a general internist at the Cambridge Health Alliance and co-founder of Updates in Slow Medicine. On September 1st, 2016, the National Institutes of Health published a study showing that alternative therapies can be effective in treating chronic pain. NBC News medical correspondent Dr. John Torres explained the findings of the study in a September 1st news report.
For those with arthritic knee pain, acupuncture and Tai Chi had the best results. For neck pain, massage therapy, and back pain, it's acupuncture and yoga. Not so effective, natural supplements like glucosamine and chondroitin.
And here's a moment from a 2015 episode of John Oliver's HBO show Last Week Tonight. It's a montage of the famous Dr. Oz endorsing herbal supplements on his TV show, complete with Oliver's stunned reaction.
I want you to write it down. Garcinia Cambogia. Because it may be the simple solution you've been looking for to bust your body fat for good.
Now I've got the number one miracle in a bottle to burn your fat.
Lightning in a bottle. It's a miracle flower to fight fat.
Miracle flowers? Are you a doctor or an Old West traveling salesman?
Dr. Andrew Weil, do you worry about the quality of these botanical supplements?
Of course. Actually, it's funny because I did a controlled study of Garcinia Cambogia at the University of Arizona and found that it had absolutely no effect on weight loss. But yes, of course, I'm concerned about that.
Dr. Peter Cohen, speak to that as an MD. Dr. Cohen?
I have a lot of concerns about the supplements that are on our store shelves today. The problem is that we often perceive these to be less sort of operating on a completely different system. But in fact, many of the most potent supplements are ones that have the exactly same pharmaceutical drugs in it that might be prescribed. Dr. Weil writes about that in his book. Lovastatin, for example, a prescription drug, is precisely the same chemical that's found in red yeast rice supplements. We've studied yohimbe, for example, an African plant, which from the extract you can get yohimbine, and this is also a prescription medication. So sometimes we're dealing with exactly the same prescription drugs that you might have gotten from your physician.
Dr. Weil?
But yeah, let me say, however, I think that is an even greater problem with over-the-counter medications. That the fact that medications are sold over-the-counter, I think, fosters the belief that these are safe and benign. And in fact, in many cases, these are drugs that originally were prescription-only drugs that are now marketed in over-the-counter form, sometimes in lower doses. That's true of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents, NSAIDs. It's true of the PPIs, the proton pump inhibitors, and many other medications. So I think that's an even greater problem than what I see with dietary supplements.
So the challenge here is that I think that Americans can make good decisions if they have all the information. Consumers can make good decisions for themselves. So I'm all for transparency as in terms of how we're selling these products. The glaring difference between over-the-counter medications and botanical supplements is that the first category is required to list a precise dose on the label, and there are very high standards to make sure that every pill contains that. In addition, any adverse effects, and I completely agree with Dr. Weil that there are many of these over-the-counter products, need to be listed as part of the labeling of every single package sold. Mm. Now, contrast that to supplements, where there is no law that a specific dose of the ingredient needs to be present on the label. It can be buried in a proprietary blend. And there is no law that says that a consumer needs to be told what are the known adverse effects of the supplements. Mm. And finally, the how it can be sold in terms of promotionally is not based on anything that even touches on hard science. If you have a Petri dish and you sprinkle a supplement on it and some cells seem to divide a little faster, you can say that increases metabolism.
So, Dr. Weil, would you like to see the FDA regulate more of this stuff?
Jane, may I quote a paragraph from my book?
Okay.
For some years now, I have called for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to create a new division of natural therapeutic agents to regulate dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and other natural products marketed for health benefits. Its purpose would be to ensure that products of this sort are safe and effective, not to thwart consumer access to them. Labeling should give indications for use as well as recommended dosage. Other countries, Canada and Germany, for instance, do a better job of this than the United States.
Let's get Octavia in here from Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Octavia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm glad to be on.
Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
So in listening to this, I was thinking a lot about employment and the fact that a lot of Americans have difficulty getting time off, and medicine, in terms of taking prescribed medication, gives the job kind of security. They feel like, okay, if they're taking this medication, the person is okay. So the respect for certain other treatments isn't really there. And I think that the society, we kind of have to adapt and change. There are a lot of intersectional things at play, such as race, that prevent people from even knowing about, like, certain medication.
Octavia, thank you. Dr. Weil, this goes back to your earlier point from Brenda's call, right? But to Octavia's point about the time factor here, a lot of these integrative therapies takes a lot of time. It's easier just to sort of pop a pill, isn't it?
It is easier for both doctor and patient in many cases. But I think, as Dr. Cohen said, this is a matter of education and getting proper information out there. In many cases, yes, lifestyle change may take more effort and time, but the long-term benefits are much greater.
Jermaine is on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Jermaine. Welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
My wife and I are huge components of integrative medicine. We go to the Osher Center here in Nashville, Tennessee through Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. My wife was diagnosed with complex regional pain syndrome almost 10 years ago. At that time, she was on every and any medication that you could possibly think of for pain management. And we were told that, you know, just give up and, you know, things will never get any better. I'm proud to report today that we're actually pregnant with our first child. She has a fantastic job. We go to the Osher Center probably 3 times a week for mindfulness and massage and just anything that you can think of. Mm-hmm. And our medical team is fantastic. And I understand that our experience isn't going to be the norm for everyone, but I just want to say that anyone who is frustrated with the way things are going with their medical treatment, I would absolutely give it a try because it's undoubtedly changed our life for the better.
A success story for you.
We're thrilled with our team.
Thank you very much, Jermaine. I do appreciate the call from Nashville. Let's go to Enrique in Miami. Hi, you're on the air, Enrique. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Jane. Thank you for taking my call. I'll go straight to the point. I know you're short on the time. So I've had a long history of back pains and since I was little, about 14, 15 years old. And every time I went to the doctor, the same thing happened. I got an anti-inflammatory. I had to wait 4 or 5 days for the pain to go away, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Until the day that I went to this old chiropractor, old school chiropractor, and basically what he told me is like, you need to stretch a little more. As soon as you start stretching, your pain is going to go away. I start stretching, and it's amazing because whenever I forget about stretching, a couple of days will pass by, most likely I end up having a back pain. Now, besides that, the other thing he also told me is You know, we are what we eat, so we have to pay more attention to what we eat. So instead of anti-inflammatories, I add it to my diet regularly. I eat ginger, I eat garlic, I eat onions, I put turmeric, fresh turmeric. So I see that whenever there's a new vegetable or a new root or anything that they say that is good for something, mm-hmm. all of a sudden we have supplements. My question to the panel was exactly, why can't we educate our people to just eat better on that matter, finding the right resources of what we really need to have in our daily diet so we don't have to go to those medicines and we don't have to go to the supplements?
Enrique, thank you very much.
Well, one reason is that nutrition is still either not taught or taught very poorly in medical schools, and that's one of the glaring deficiencies in medical education that we're trying to remedy in integrative medicine.
Enrique, thanks for the call. Dr. Y, what do you eat? What supplements do you take?
I'm a pesco vegetarian, so I eat fish and vegetables.
Okay.
I grow a lot of my own food. I cook, mm-hmm. cook for myself. I take supplements. I take turmeric. I take some mixed Asian mushrooms for immune support. I take vitamin D. What else? I take CoQ10. I think that's about it.
Dr. Cohen, should medical schools do a better job of preparing doctors to treat patients with alternative methods, with more integrative approaches?
Well, in terms of doing a better job of emphasizing the importance of lifestyle changes as the absolute first go-to, absolutely we should be doing a better job in terms of education. Now, when it comes to the other treatments, though, acupuncture to botanicals, here my point of view is that what we need to do is really teach our medical students how to interpret the literature, how to understand the evidence, so that each physician can be looking at the evidence and really deciding what is high quality and what is not. Because the problem is not if someone wants to go to the store and have access to black cohosh. I completely agree we should all have access to that if we want to. The question is whether or not we, as physicians, should be recommending it.
Here's Jenny in Kennebunkport, Maine. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, guest. I wanted to touch on just a couple of points. First, for seniors, one of the things that I do with my clients is that I write down all of the medications that they take, and I do some research and talk to them and ask them to speak to their doctors, because that happened with my mom, and they had her so over-medicated that some of the medications caused some severe problems. Mm. So that's number one. But number two, in reference to me, I suffer from severe body pains and real bad migraines. And sometimes doctors don't take the time because they're so overbooked to look at people's files. I was prescribed Levaquil for a lung issue, which pretty much sent me to the emergency room for severe migraines and had such horrific joint and ligament pains that it pretty much put me in bed for over 2 weeks. Mm. So the prescribing of medication when someone is so sick, I had real bad pneumonia and flu, and they gave me this. At that point, I'm not reading what it, the side effects are.
Right, and it's hard to know, Jenny, when you're so sick. I do appreciate your call. Dr. Cohen, jump in here quickly. My time is short.
So I just think Jenny's point about writing down the medications is so important. And I would just add to that, also write down the supplements that you're using and bring those to your doctor and, you know, have a thorough conversation about the evidence to support the medications and be skeptical about that and the evidence to support the botanicals.
Dr. Weil, I got to get Big Pharma in here. You talk a lot about that in your book and direct advertising to consumers.
Yeah, that's an evil practice that should be ended. There's only one other country in the world that allows it, New Zealand. It's been a huge boon to the pharmaceutical companies, a disaster for medical practice. And the pharmaceutical companies have enormous influence over the prescribing habits of physicians. I think they have also corrupted medical journals. That's a huge issue. And I want to say one point about what Dr. Cohen said about evidence. In integrative medicine, we advocate using a sliding scale of evidence that works like this. The greater the potential of a treatment to cause harm, the stricter the standards of evidence it should be held to for efficacy. If I recommend a breathing technique to a patient to control anxiety. I am not bothered by the fact that there's not much published evidence on breathing because nobody's taken it seriously. The potential for harm for that treatment is minimal. And I think that's true for many of these other methods that we've been talking about.
I appreciate that, and I completely agree. When I recommend a healthy dietary change or exercise, it's not necessarily that I'm going to have strong evidence in that specific case that I know it's going to work well. But on the other hand, what I'm concerned about is sometimes integrative physicians sometimes put all the different treatments on the same level playing field. And it's very hard for the consumer to really know where is the evidence and does the evidence really exist.
As that is equally true for pharmaceutical medication, you know, there the evidence for many of the drugs that are most commonly used and that are most dangerous, I think, is not very good.
Dr. Well, I've got about a minute left here. What would you leave us with? Advice about over-medication, what you've learned in this book?
Be an informed consumer. Be aware that that drugs that are out there over the counter on prescription are very powerful. They have risks. They have benefits. You want to know what their appropriate uses are, what their risks are, and you want to know about whether there are other ways of managing, non-medication ways of managing the conditions that you're dealing with.
And what advice do you give to people who say, you know, takes too much time, I can't, too much money, which is a real concern for a lot of people?
Although, you know, dietary change, practicing a breathing technique, walking more, these are not expensive interventions. And I think that, again, informing yourself about why these other methods may be safer and in the long run better, there's no substitute for information and education.
Really interesting conversation. My thanks to both of you. Dr. Peter Cohen, general internist at the Cambridge Health Alliance, co-founder of Updates in Slow Medicine. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Jane.
You're welcome.
Dr. Andrew Weil, director of the University of Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine and author of Mind Over Meds. Know when your drugs are necessary, when alternatives are better, and when to let your body heal on its own. Dr. Weil, really appreciate your time there from Tucson, Arizona. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Tom's back tomorrow. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.